CliffCentral.com. Download the Cliff Central app, available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
Hey, welcome to the Futurology Show, guys. It's another week, and guess what? B2 here, Brett Lindsay, the digital philosopher, has actually made it on time. Yeah, with me in studio, the legends that held down the fort last week, we got Mike Cowan.
Hi there, nice to see you again.
B3, Brett Sinclair.
Brett Sinclair, digital disruptor and squirrel rocker.
Yes.
So, guys, you know we've got a special guest in this afternoon, right?
Yeah.
Just look to your left, just a quick.
Oh, yeah, I
Karen
see her.
Karen Wallstra. So Karen's a bit of a legend at Google. She runs all the education pieces, and it used to be South Africa. I believe it's now global. She's looking after Chrome, all these exciting things. So I must admit, I'm a bit of a Google fanboy these days. Karen, welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody.
Thank you. Bye, Dan. Thank you, studio audience.
Hi, everyone. This is really exciting. We're going to share a bit about education and what's happening and think a bit about the future.
Excellent. Yes. So if you did miss all of the tweets and all of the messaging from Cliff Central, today we are talking the future of knowledge. The subtitle of that is, are we a smarter or wiser society, and what is the impact on our careers? That's the topic. We're going to get into that pretty heavily. I think there's a lot of views in the room.
Jeez. Getting a bit nervous.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I actually get goosebumps just thinking about it. It's not just the aircon, actually. There's such a huge amount of change happening at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's not just things that we need to look for in like 10 years' time or 5 years' time. There's stuff happening right now that affects what we should be doing from an education perspective, from a societal perspective. And we've got the social impact solutionist, Mr. Michael Cowan. And yeah, you're going to tell us more about that as well. But
yeah, you know, the problem with this subject is it's you know, it's like the seed subject almost to what needs to happen. Because at the end of the day, it's people first, technology second. And how we learn and how we engage with the world is changing at such a rapid rate. And education is the bedrock to this entire system, our schooling system.
For a moment there, I thought you were going to say H2H.
No.
Chlorine.
No H2H today.
Humans to humans.
We've done that subject. You know, this is just about people, you know, and human lives actually matter.
Yes. Hashtag human lives matter.
So they do. But it's an incredibly fascinating subject, I think. And when you look at our education system, it comes out of the archangels of the Middle East and the Middle Ages from Europe and
industrial era, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we still have kids sitting in a classroom listening to the teacher, and we still got the challenges of scaling education and making sure the best content gets to the children, and are we shaping them right?
I don't even know if it's a scale issue, Brett, because this is about structuring education in a world that is completely different.
The entire content landscape's changed.
In fact, I read something about it, and since we started talking about this, I haven't actually stopped thinking about it. It's become a bit of an issue because my wife keeps asking me, what's wrong with me? Where am I?
I can help her with that.
You can. No, well, let's leave our wives out of this conversation, Brett.
Sounding like our WhatsApp chat.
Yeah, exactly. B2 keeps muting himself in the WhatsApp chat. But you know, it's almost like we're sitting in this world that you know, as software, you've got to keep running updates. And education hasn't had an update.
No.
But I'm not too sure we know what we've got to update yet. And that's why we need to talk to Karen here. She's got to tell us about the updates. So the next hour is all yours.
Oh, that's going to be good. I hope you help along the way. So, I mean, if you just think about how education hasn't changed, and I mean, that's really scary because of the environment we live in with all the apps, with all the technology. And I think schools themselves are confused. Like, where do we start? What kind of tech should we use? What do we need? And then your main question was, so what do we actually teach the children?
Yeah.
And what studies are showing is that we actually don't need so much knowledge in terms of content, because that's out there. What we need to know is, how do we actually analyze that? How do we know which is the most accurate website? How do we actually know what is the best kind of situation or solution to a problem within that space? And so it's how do we teach the children to think?
Yeah.
And I think we're not doing enough of that.
There's so many influences on children not thinking, and I'm going to blame Google on the instant access to knowledge right now.
Yeah.
You don't have to think. So I agree with you on the mark. How do we teach them to think differently? I've spent a lot of time in the business space going, guys, think differently.
It's the value of information, though, as well. I've got a thing that I heard actually was a comedian that said it, and it was the time between not knowing something and knowing something these days is so short because we've got things like Google and this collaborative global knowledge that we just
Sound like a funny comedian.
No, no. So he had it a lot more funny. It was really cool. It was like trying to explain to his grandparents how the internet works, and that's always a funny story. The silver surfers out there are always in despair. But yeah, the fact that society's placed less and less knowledge, value on information and knowledge, we've almost come to expect it. And we're so result-driven when it comes to learning that we're kind of like, oh, I'll just get to the result. It's not so much the process anymore. And that's pretty much where education is. Education's the process of learning. It's that idea, that understanding that I don't know something, therefore I need to know something, therefore I need to do something in order to know something. And education is that, but it's not moving as fast as this instant society is allowing us to.
But I think process still is there. It's just a different process.
Quicker,
but also in terms of the person, the human. So the process would be, how do I solve a problem? What's the process I go through to actually solve a problem? How do I end up with a workable solution? How do I know that what I'm looking at is accurate? So that's still a process you've got to work through. It's just a different process. And how do you achieve that? So, for example, I said to some teachers the other day, what if your exam papers were the other way around, where you gave children the answers and the children had to come up with the questions?
And 2,000 Rand on 702.
So you basically played Jeopardy with them.
And the higher the more higher order thinking the question is, the more marks the child gets. So if it's just a straight knowledge and recall kind of question, oh, well, that's just easy. But if you've got to start getting children to think, how do you formulate a question? Because if we want to solve a problem, we've got to know what the question is.
Exactly. It's a great point. I mean, I think of my education, and I really am quite stupid. I had to do my trick twice because I failed Afrikaans. But, you know, by and large, my education.
Wasn't just that.
Yeah, look, let's not go too far down the road there. But
you've opened the door to standardized.
I really did. But you know, the point was, you know, my education was around the ability to learn by rote. I mean, that's what it was. Geography, maths. Well, maths was a bit more creative, but, you know, geography, history, science. It was the ability to remember knowledge. And that hasn't really changed. And I think what fascinates me, and we alluded to it slightly, and I'd love to understand what Google's vision is around education, because as soon as you just take Wikipedia as a base of knowledge and you throw an AI algorithm in there that allows you to index that information, I don't have to learn the geography, the history. It's available at my fingertips. There's a whole different thought process here and how we teach children how to think, which I think is a great point. But what is Google's vision around education? Because as an influential company, with the database and the cloud, et cetera, and the algorithms, where do they see this going?
So I think from an education space, Google has a suite of tools. And so it's not just one kind of aspect. And it's how the teachers can actually use those tools to enhance their teaching in a variety of ways. So Google has been doing workshops with teachers around 21st century learning, which is skills around problem solving, communication, and all those types of things. So they'd actually done some research with The Economist. And these were the skills that businesses are saying that people need.
Yeah.
And so within that, Google is saying, well, here are tools that teachers can use to actually save them time where they can actually teach more and actually engage more with their students, and things like admin and things which were sort of cumbersome or difficult for teachers to do are made easier.
So what kind of tools do they do?
So for example,
I'm just thinking as a normal user, Chrome, search. What other things do they
do? So Google for Education is like your Google for Work. Companies are Google for Work. It offers a suite. And there's a really cool app within that space called Google Classroom. And Google Classroom is a space where teachers can put all their content that they want for the students to use. And then what the students can then see easily with what the content is. Teachers can see if students are working or on their work. They can mark it and send it back to their students really quickly and easily. So it's all within one space that really makes it effective for teachers. So many moons ago, when I used an online platform, from a teaching point of view, the best thing was I never had to carry books home. So at that stage, I was only teaching boys. And instead of carrying crates and crates and crates of books home, I could engage with the learners that same night. They would get their marks, they would get their responses, and they could feed back to you. And now if I take that, this has developed even so much more. So you engaging with your students. The other excuse with dogs eating your homework, that can't happen anymore.
I mean, that's an expensive homework. Right.
My homework's been ransomed by Bitcoin people. Teacher, can I have 2 Bitcoin to get my homework, please?
Yes, absolutely.
So that will be futuristic problems teachers will have. Sorry, ma'am.
But so that's the idea then. Google's done a great idea at aggregating and actually storing a lot of information which we can determine to be knowledgeable or just completely crazy. And for those of you that are just listening, we are the Futurology Show. Where have you been? It's hashtag Futurology. If you've got any questions on Twitter, tweet us up at cliffcentral.com, hashtag Futurology. You'll see all the at handles flying around by us during the show and after the show. But we're tackling a topic called the future of knowledge. So we're going to touch on a number of topics around the future of knowledge, automated services and employment and education being one of them. But the subtitle of it is, are we a smarter society? Are we a smarter, wiser society? And what is the impact that this will have on our careers and society in the future? So one thing I'm just going to interject just to change the focus of this a bit is looking at how the connected world has allowed us to socially share fails. We've all seen fail armies. We've all had a good look. That's as easily findable. I'm going to discoverable. Adjectives, anybody else?
I don't know. Verbs? Not even Grammarly's going to help you.
Yeah, no, I'm lost. See, this is the thing. We think we're smart because we have devices and we get complacent with the technology that enables us to think or appear to be smarter than we are. But it as easily shows us crap. We get to see fail army. We get to laugh at people and little kittens falling off of fridges and all these things. And you spend hours doing that. If we spent the same amount of human capital time researching the wealth of cognitive knowledge that the world sources us, we would be smarter. But so Google, as the big powerhouse search engine of the world is, you serve both of those. Are there strategic intents behind a company like Google and others that are saying, well, maybe education needs to be more of a key focus in serving things? So don't serve brands, don't serve things, serve education. Just a thought. I'm throwing that into the mix, and we all have points of views.
Yeah.
So, I was about to say, Google's got to be a bit careful around content and how the content's
being deployed. We're not picking on Google at all. We're just very curious.
And I like kind of where they're thinking around the collaborative element. So providing tools that enable our kids and teachers to be able to collaborate at a much faster pace, right? And that pace and being able to publish and get content online and scale that content, I think it's really important. But, the internet and social is human interest driven, right?
Yeah.
So how do we make it really exciting as so your Facebooks and Google are the access portals to this content? And I guess it's part of a content provider's role to make it so relevant and so exciting. And I think about this the whole time with my children. And I go, if my kids were this excited about PewDiePie on YouTube,
poor Felix,
what happens if there's a PewDiePie as exciting in the education space?
And it's almost gamified.
Yeah. Actually quite an interesting little device here, your Sphero. And I don't know if anyone's played with a Sphero, a little ball that you kind of move it around and it does really cool things from your phone. But it looks like, is it Google that's doing this? Or what content provider is working on this, Karen?
So what I was showing the guys earlier was that there's a thing now called coding with Chrome.
Yes.
So if we talk about children and getting them to think, one of the ways of teaching children to think logically and helping them is with different coding. So coding is the American term. We call it programming. And
go us. Can we just coin it as software engineering? Sounds a lot sexier, right? Yeah.
You guys are dumber than us, man.
So the coding with Chrome now has a little section for robots, and it links with Spheros or with the Legos EV3s or with MBots. And then the children can write little codes using block coding and then program these little devices to run around. And I think if we started introducing things like that where students can be engaged with things more actively, I think that's what should make learning
good
really
point,
well.
Right? Internet of Things in the education space. So you're mixing that kind of soft component into the real world so they can physically see the effect.
Yeah, I think
that's quite powerful.
Yeah, I think children need to be able to relate, why are we doing this? How does the real world relate
outcomes
to what
based.
I'm doing? Yeah, and I think that's really, really important because why am I learning this? So, I mean, when you're doing maths, if you know, well, engineers need this to design bridges because otherwise the bridge is going to collapse. So therefore, you do need a basis of maths. Maybe the kids would actually be more engaged, you know, especially those that aren't. And so how do we actually make learning meaningful?
But it raises a very important question for me because I remember watching a TED Talk with Sal Khan, who founded the Khan Academy, and he was saying how he's flipped the classroom. The one thing that struck me quite prevalently was that no kid is bad at maths. There's sections of maths that kids are bad.
Yeah, I agree.
And what he was doing, and they were doing some experiments in the States around this, is you go to school to do your homework. You go home and you watch the lessons online. You go into the Khan Academy and you watch the lessons. And the kids that are excelling in one area at maths tutor the kids that are not doing too well in the other area, and then vice versa in the respective areas. And what this says is that each one of us is a fundamentally different human being. We all have a different want, desire, and really the outcomes of where we're getting to as human beings and the future of what kind of work that we will be doing means that we have to be educating in a very, very different way. And in fact, if I just extrapolate my thought process, I think matric is actually irrelevant, quite frankly, because it's a generic benchmark that says, you know, we can all pass the standard. But for some, it's easier than others. And it raises a very, very powerful question for me. You know, how soon should we be looking at these kids and streamlining them into the areas that they need to be going and allowing them to develop the skills that they really want to develop as opposed to have to? Because you know what? Trust me, don't ask me to do Afrikaans. I cannot speak the language. And it's because I'm useless at languages. I can barely speak English.
Sure, Mike, you've really tapped onto a really interesting point there. So in businesses, we measure ourselves on that metric as a KPI or a personal 100%. Development score that we're learning in business is the wrong way to motivate people and get the best out of people. And it's very difficult to design, and you're creating these inaccurate bars. So what you're suggesting there is that we need to take the same approach into the education
space.
Absolutely. Rethink how we measure success.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And what is success?
Exactly. So,
if I can solve a problem and I'm 12 years old and I can start a business, why shouldn't I be able to? Why do I have to move all the way through the education ladder? And what is that ladder?
Yeah.
And do you actually need a ladder, as in a linear type thing?
Yeah, I want a triangle.
Well, why not? And so how do we actually make big scalable systems in this kind of space? So the thinking is very different. But how do we actually address the needs of the individual learner? And for me, that's where I think technology also plays a role.
Yeah.
So never before have you been able to create individual learning more easily than you can do now. So if I think when I first started teaching as a teacher, if you had your 30 little children in the class and you had to divide them into groups, it took weeks. Whereas now you could use technology to assist you, and you can very quickly and easily see who needs instant assistance and who can carry on their own and carry on working on the task because they've grasped it and they can move on.
Yeah.
So we could use technology to really change the way we work without really big changes.
What's the barrier to enabling that? Because you see these incredible solutions, but we don't see it getting implemented
the
on
adoption,
the ground.
Right?
We don't see the adoption.
But it's the same thing in big business again. Adopting this is really difficult. Yeah.
But there's a lot of The focus, I think, is sometimes wrong from legacy fundamental schooling. It's what is the objective of education? It's like when we invented the stove, we weren't just trying to see if we could make something hot. We're trying to use it so we could cook something. We're trying to boil water.
Ooh, there was hot. No, it's not hot enough.
No, exactly. But that was one of my first lessons that I ever remember learning in my human existence was I was told that plate is going to burn you if you touch it.
Yes.
And I was like, no, Mum, I don't believe you. And hand on plate, I now know. Yeah. And that brings us to the definition of knowledge versus wisdom. So I've got a really interesting quote here, which I just want to throw into the mix because there is a very big difference. So in a website called philosophy.com. They say that knowledge is the accumulation of facts.
Say that three times quickly.
Philosophy.
Damn it.
The .com would have killed me, though. Knowledge is the accumulation of facts and information. Wisdom is the synthesis of knowledge and experiences into insights that deepen one's understanding of relationships and the meaning of life. In other words, knowledge is a tool, and wisdom is the craft in which the tool is used.
Exactly.
I have to mute myself. I cannot contribute off this.
That was amazing.
I don't feel that I'm ever going to add value like that before.
It was just cut because it wasn't mine.
but I do have something to add on top of that. Have you got some more to quote there?
No. Because that was enough.
Because you know what? The first power that comes out of that is the ability to understand.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the knowledge. If we can synthesize Wikipedia, throw AI on, and we can now, I mean, think about it. If I can sum the total of knowledge of law, sorry, there's some pictures going around here on knowledge, but
the knowledge of law, yes,
the knowledge of law, the power that we need then is not knowledge, it's understanding, which translates into wisdom,
practical.
Because you know what, I also put my hand on the stove as a kid. Yes. I have to be honest.
Well, there's this wonderful quote for knowledge and wisdom that's maybe a little bit less verbose, and it's: knowledge is knowing a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put it on a salad or a fruit salad. Sorry, it's not a fruit salad. So just because we know it's a fruit doesn't mean it makes its way into our fruit salad.
But then if we threw a curveball, why not?
Well, that's exactly what the world does. So rock and roll. Karen Walser at the pitching mound. Jeez. Go for it.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that often we're thrown into stereotypes and made to think in certain ways. And why should we not be thinking out the box? Why should we not be encouraging anybody, but particularly within schools, children to think differently?
That's exactly
why are children not asked to ask questions rather than just to be told? And I think that's where the change happens, and encouraging them to think differently. I mean, we sit on this kind of space where, yes, we've got knowledge, but how do we actually use it?
Exactly. Now, if you've just joined the show and this is interesting you, and you're a teacher, or you're trying to mold young minds at home, school, or wherever it is you're trying to do it.
Or you're a parent.
Or you're just trying to get smarter yourself. Then,
Mike,
listen in. We're halfway through the show and we are talking about the future of knowledge. You threw me off. Yeah. Thank you.
I was just thinking about
Squirrels
Mike.
Rock, you're derailing trains of thought.
Yeah. I was thinking about Mike, both of you putting your hand on the stove, and what I suddenly thought was...
You were the guy that turned the stove on.
No, but imagine President Bush when he sees a red button in the nuclear tower. President Trump. Yeah.
If President Bush comes back, heaven help us all. That'll be amazing.
No.
But yeah, so if you are here, there's a ton of resources, and that's kind of what I'm getting to, is that we have this amazing amount of stored knowledge that we have. The big thing is access to it. Now, there's access that we can discover or we can be told about, but think of yourself as a 13-year-old student. Mm. I'm going to go into the internet, and because I know the internet is a place for Facebook and social media and Snapchat or wherever else I'm going to do, my first thought is not, I'm going to see what Wikipedia said today. I'm going to go and find out if Carol Dweck has a new TED Talk, which, by the way, she does. And Carol Dweck is a fantastic education professor who says the power of yet. And she doesn't mark students as failing. She says, you haven't got it right yet.
Mm.
Give them the opportunity to strive for continuous improvement, which is essentially the culture of innovation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So there are plenty of resources, and we know them because we have researched for the show, surprisingly, and we did our homework, and we went and we've done some stuff. But there are these amazing resources. How do we work as a social responsibility or as a society of responsible people to drive the rest of us to that space? I'm going to stop now because I've thrown enough into the thing. And Karen, that's your question. How do we stop people watching? Here's the question.
Sure, Mike and I are both going to
how do we
tag
stop
out of that one.
Shitting dog stares in the corner here. Come on, guys.
I need to go.
Karen, how do we stop people watching Fail Army, which is still fun and there is a time and a place for it, and start watching things like TED Talks or searching things like TED Talks or being served classroom.google.com?
But doesn't it start at home?
Doesn't it?
So if you think of of your own families and your children, and how are you encouraging them to think? So if you're saying the world is changing and we need our children to cope with change, don't we start with that within our own homes? So how do we teach children to be responsible citizens that are still thinking creative, problem-solving within their home spaces? Because I think that's your first step.
Yeah.
And what do they talk about? Your first 1,000 days are the most important days in your child's life.
But if only half the parents on the planet had the Google knowledge to find that advice. Again, it's this vicious circle.
But is it?
I was just about to say.
But isn't it as a societal thing?
Yes.
So, I mean, if we talk about Ubuntu and working together within the society, is that if we talk about family as a big unit and not just singular family,
not your close little home unit.
So how do we actually help each other?
I think there are two streams that happen here, and I think it's very easy to see how we get lost on Facebook and spend half an hour mindlessly scrolling through it, which is why I've taken it off my phone, because it's too easy. But I think the other side of the equation, you know, a pendulum swings equally both ways. We don't it was very good, hey?
Hashtag it.
But what we don't often see are the incredible things that are actually happening.
Mm.
You know, the evolution of our education, how it's changing.
Yes.
But I think also, and yes, man, this frustrates me because I haven't stopped thinking about this. I haven't done any work for the last week, but I'm also not sure that technically we're where we need to be, you know, because it's very easy to say, let's go onto Wikipedia and are we excited about what's on the top end of Wikipedia? But I think we're going through this massive transition that still needs to evolve to a final outcome or into a more structured outcome. And I think when those structures start falling into place, I think we'll start seeing where the other side of the pendulum is swinging to.
Yeah, so I mean, if we think about structures and the way schools are working, I mean, there are some amazing teachers at amazing schools. And it goes back to the statement earlier about how do we make a change? And I think things don't change because of the individuals in the classroom. So when a teacher's classroom door closes, no matter how much training and things have happened, you can have a really old school classroom or you can have an amazing classroom depending on the individual. So it's how do we show teachers just within the system to use the technologies, to use the things around them, to inspire them so that they can see, hey, I don't have to be scared. I don't have to be afraid. So removing that fear so that you can actually start changing the structure within.
Guys, I keep hearing the word change again.
Change.
We hear it in business. We hear it in education. And part of me is kind of thinking, imagine if we had to rethink the way we structure content in the education space where we have chemistry and life,
whatever.
And we actually had a change class or something
like that. Forget life orientation, life adaptation.
Yes. You know,
totally.
Help people. Like I often think about, I guess, when we were educated, being taught how to learn.
Hmm.
I think kids are better taught how to learn these days. We should be taught how to change.
So I used to teach the most amazing subject that has slowly disappeared called design and technology. And the whole purpose was to get people to think. And so you did structures and mechanisms and systems and impact of technology on society. And for me, that's exactly what you're saying, Brett, where it's looking at all the different areas and how you relate it to life and how you make learning meaningful, because you took a situation, you had to solve the problem, you had to use different technologies to solve that problem. Your technologies, like we think of as in terms of IT and those kinds, were just another tool that you use to help do that. And I think that's what school is.
Yeah.
It's just
can I ask you a question? I was asking my brothers over the Christmas holidays, because the kids seem to be getting more A's than when we were at school. Do you have an answer to that? Are these kids being taught better? Have things become easier?
Who knows?
Okay, because I couldn't get to the bottom of it, and they just said, no, the education process is a lot better. I do question if it's relevant, but they just seem to be doing
And I think it differs from school to school and individual to individual, and who knows?
Okay, all right. Yeah.
So just Brett Sinclair, yes.
So I keep thinking, so we're thinking about how we're scoring people and the metric and people – changing how they're working. But how about we raise this bar?
Yeah.
How about imagine if we had to set the bar of an A to be 3 times higher than anywhere else in the world.
That would make it at least 50% in this country.
But why do we need an A? So what is an A?
There we go.
Yes.
There we go.
Standardized testing is crap.
But
there we go.
And A in the circumstance that we're talking about. Like, so I'm always looking at, so you've always got to improve, right? So you've got to define what you want to improve.
But what if you define? So exactly what you've said. Why does it need to be somebody else who's defining for you?
Boom.
So
boom, love it.
Here's another horrible topic to throw in, but do you think that educators act as a regulatory regime of fundamentalists who control the rate of change and transfer of information, or do you think that traditional education has been obsolete for years but has just not been able to adapt quick enough to the change?
Don't you think it depends on the school?
I do think it depends on the school, but when you look at society, it's the vast majority that determine the path we take.
So is it the education department, or is it society sort of deciding for the education department? So if the education department came in with a radical kind of change, how would society react? And maybe it's a really mixed conglomeration of all of that.
Yeah.
So
it feels like you're getting all this from Wikipedia.
No, I'm not. That was me.
Jeez.
That was all me. It came out. But
this is the show getting smarter as we go.
I hope so. I really do. I'm actually convinced that my cranium is changing shape while we talk. But we talk so much about the huge advancement in technology through innovation and open source ability and access to things. And look how well we've done. So educated people that are not in a system or institution of any sort of learning have gone into an open source world where they have access, importantly, and they've got collaboration to other humans. Now we've come leaps and bounds, but yet we've left the traditional institution of education and schooling behind. And I do actually have a really good, before you interject, Brett Sinclair, I'm going to ask, there's Albert Einstein said, wisdom is not a product of schooling, but of the lifelong attempt to acquire it.
Yeah.
So such a process is lengthy and arduous, which teaches the pursuer patience and humility. Seldom is a person unchanged by such trial. When one finally uncovers a connection of insight or insight, he or she believes to be universally applicable truth. Sorry, but basically, the striving for information, the achieving and the attaining of that information makes it so much more valuable to the person that they're actually able to use it again.
So interestingly enough, from the education department point of view, they have sort of a focus on lifelong learning. And it's saying, how well are we achieving that?
Yes.
So how are we encouraging children, teachers, society to be continual lifelong learners? Mm-hmm. Because that's what we're really doing all the time.
You know what the problem with this is? And I was actually watching a TED talk on this about the brain and the plasticity of our ability to adapt. Yeah. And it comes to the environment that we live in.
Hashtag it.
Loving it.
but it all comes down to the environment. And this is a very, very difficult thing for most South Africans, the environments that we're living in and the trying and testing conditions which we do live in, because it comes down to our ability to redefine what are fundamentally bad habits that we've learned and turning them into good habits. Because as we grow older, our brains don't become more fixed and rigid. We just stop trying to change ourselves. We stop trying to push ourselves beyond the boundaries. But it's an environmental thing, and it's like, you banks want to stop people losing credit cards as you or debit cards as you take them out the machines.
Whose banks?
Just banks. Just banks in general. But you know what? Instead of giving the person money first, you make them take their card out first, so that they don't lose the card.
It did help. Yep.
It did help. Yep. It really did help. But
it was the other way around. Everyone walked off with the money.
Exactly.
And left the car, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it becomes an environmental thing, which is a massive player in terms of our education. Your quote about is it the schooling system? I think it has a huge impact on the environment.
And the same with the fail and the yet. Mm. So, I mean, the neuroscientists tell us that if you actually say to yourself, no, I can't do this, your brain actually stops thinking about that problem and actually moves on. Mm. So if we've said to a child, oh, you failed.
Yes.
What are they going to think?
There's a result now.
I can't do this. Yes. Yeah. Whereas if you said to them, come on. It's a yet.
It's tough because it's tough.
Yes, just do it
and
find the answer. We'll probably have much more success. So how do we change it?
Accepting failure, right?
Yes.
Well, failure is the definition of success.
It's correct. Yeah. We've got to get into that habit of failing very, 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 very quickly.
Yeah.
But no. failure is not the end.
No.
And I think that's kind of what standardized testing allows people to think that the idea of failure is the end.
Yeah.
Where it really is just an opportunity to look for a different way of doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. Can I create another hashtag? Failure is the definition of success.
What? You say it again?
Failure is the definition of success.
Yes.
Are you tweeting these things, Michael?
No, I'm not, Michael. I'm too busy thinking about them.
Okay. For those of you that are listening, if you want to jump onto the Twitter wagon and throw in some of these hashtags, you can own it before Michael Cowan, because he's saying these great things, but he hasn't learned that if you type it first, you own it forever.
You know what we're going to do is we're going to push all of this verbal stuff into Google Cloud, translate it from voice to text, and off we go.
Welcome to Futurology Show, the open source education platform of Cliff Central.
There we go.
Well, so, just talking about
Sinclair
voice.
Sinclair is tweeting it right now.
Just talking about voice. Have any of you played with the voice typing in Google Docs? So go and have a play within that. So it actually will type at the speed that you're speaking. So maybe we could get Twitter to do the same and you could talk your hashtag.
But I used to do that in varsity. I was the guy at the back of the room that could type fast. So all my mates used to take all my notes. So I challenged myself to type as fast as he spoke.
No, I was too stupid.
Come on, Google, catch up.
I'm kidding. But you don't need Google Docs for this, yeah? Because I talk to Siri every morning and I dictate my emails that I need to get out
this
for the day.
This is true. This is true.
But it has become a lot simpler.
That's excellent.
I have figured out just so own everything that Mike said by saying hashtag what Mike said.
Right. Oh, isn't the hour up yet?
No, so we still have 22 minutes to go. And I think what we should start doing is let's do the bold thing and start predicting or forecasting where to from here. Do you think that we're in a position where education should be restricted or focused through legacy understanding of institutional schooling? Is there a way that we can get a structured education made available to many so that everybody can access it? We talk about universal basic income. Screw that. Universal basic education.
Yeah.
You should. It doesn't matter where you are, what you do. We've got to the point where this digital divide is a digital abyss. And we've got to the point as well where connected society is a necessity, not a luxury. You shouldn't have to be in the high LSMs of the world in order to achieve better education. And we're all worried about automation stealing our jobs. Let's teach people to have critical thinking.
Yeah, I quite agree. I think that's the critical skill that needs to come into the future. And I think also from a technology perspective, we're still in the infancy of this. You know, if we look at varsity education and what we need to do, the fees must fall. School education, I think there's going to be radical transformation. I honestly don't think when my son gets to matric in 5 or 6 years' time that matric is actually going to be what it needs to be. It's going to be irrelevant. But I think technology, when we combine the ability to index information, to hyperlink information, and then apply AI thinking where I can query that, it's going to redefine how things, but you can only achieve that with critical thinking, and I think that's the foundation. And these massive online education courses, mind-blowing. The only problem is, of course, it takes away from the quality of the human experience because, you know, I was at Wits, but geez, I loved that pub that I spent most of my nights in. You know, so there's got to be a balance to this equation. So, yeah.
That pub resulted in me not getting my degree.
Yeah. Hashtag beer makes me cleverer. But yeah, going into, I mean, there are great opportunities for knowledge storing. There's great opportunities for automation and artificial intelligence. I think it's very important that context and experience play a huge role in shaping how that is adapted into society in the future, I think.
Yep.
If you guys agree, great. If you don't, please burn the whole place down.
So imagine if your AI could actually assist with more personalized learning. So if you've written an assessment and it can work out exactly where there perhaps are gaps in your knowledge or what you're trying to solve, and it actually then says to you, okay, how can I help you to work this out? So not making you more stupid, for want of better words, because it's a machine, but rather making you think more and making you more creative. So how can we develop that kind of technology so that it actually assists us and doesn't replace us?
Yeah.
And I think that's what could be developed in terms of machine learning.
Yeah. In Thomas Frey, he's a futurist in the Da Vinci Institute in the States. He wrote an article I think we've all shared on LinkedIn somewhere, which is by 2030, the largest company on the internet will be an online school. Yes. And the idea of this open education is fantastic. He's written a separate article where he talks about the use of AI and this collaborative knowledge all in one place. But to look back at how we store our historical information, imagine if we could have Abraham Lincoln on a hard drive somewhere and he was able to take that AI that is his, put it into context of today and allow him to try and solve some of these problems. Essentially, what will happen is that we'll completely replace all politicians with bots. But the idea that we have all of this information, but yet we do not apply it over and over again to today because it seems to be there.
Apply.
Application is everything.
So it is. It's application. And again, taking what's appropriate for that particular instance. Mm. I think that's what's important.
I have to admit, what's running through my head is when I get to this weekend, I'm going to set a bunch of tasks
that need to
be solved around the house. And challenge my children to solve this.
And not necessarily with traditional technology.
Correct.
No. Here's a hammer.
Correct.
Can't find a hammer? Here's a brick.
And here's an Apple MacBook. Go.
Do not sort the flies with the iPad. Come on. So the way I said with automation, AI, bots, all this idea that we're seeing the renaissance of today is it seems like humanity has discovered fire again. What we need to do now is discover how to apply said fire to things that we need.
No, we need to discover how not to burn ourselves with that fire. Mm.
And I think it's okay, because failing is learning.
Correct. Yeah. Ouch.
I learned. Hopefully you don't need to learn more than once.
Just learn quickly.
Learn quickly.
So let's take that UBI concept.
Yeah, so UBI, Universal Basic Income.
Basic Income.
And Elon Musk has had a lot to say about
it. He's had a lot in recent articles, right?
Yeah.
I just want to apply it to the education space. And we kind of dropped some hints early on. Imagine if we could take that kind of thinking and say, let's pay you to do education. So the more that you learn, the more that you earn. And you know what? If you want to create this lifetime career of always learning, but you'll always get paid in some kind of form of income. Mm. So that becomes your currency, what you're learning.
But is it money? I mean, just with what you said, I suddenly thought, isn't that what was happening in the Middle Ages? Where children could... Well, sometimes they didn't have a choice, but they went into different crafts and skills, and sometimes they even changed. Isn't that something?
Teaching people to earn money, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of our end objective.
Not money.
Yeah.
I don't think that money is the answer to the future. I really think that we're talking universal basic income. It should be universal basic opportunity.
Yeah.
Give everybody opportunity to do something. It's not about – all we want to do is – take the base level Maslow hierarchy of needs and just say, I want a roof over my head. I want to put food on my table.
Yep.
If money is the vehicle that we've created as humanity, then that's what we're going to go after. If it becomes the byproduct of something we're after, let money be the byproduct of something we do that's impactful.
So we were WhatsApping this discussion, right? And I think it was you, Mike, that kind of started touching on it reinvents the financial institutions.
It's
going to break that thought out a bit because... You know, if you're taking money and we're putting it in a very secondary position.
For sure. Absolutely.
What is the impact there?
I don't want to get too futuristic because none of us really know.
On the Futurology show, don't you dare.
On the Futurology show, yeah. Jess, my mouth full of teeth now. Hashtag that one. But you know, we live in a capitalistic society that is based around consuming.
Yes.
And if we look at where fundamental change has to happen when we start automating, we have things like the blockchain that enables a lot of things to happen, the transfer of value, we effectively will move from an economy of consumption to an economy of value and things that actually contribute to our lives in a more fundamental and meaningful sense than, I've bought a new car and I feel quite status driven by it. And that's the fundamental essence of what needs to change, because we cannot continue the way we're going if we look at climate change, we look at resources, and it's a critical thought process that needs to happen. And with that will come massive, massive sweeping changes. And Brett's jumping up and down.
I'm jumping up and down. I've figured out the paradox that is money that breaks the society. So we're going to hear it here first. Hopefully I get it right. But there are currently automation replacing mid-level jobs. So the mundane tasks of mid-level workers are being replaced by bots or automated services. There are also educated people that are very educated that are not getting jobs, that want jobs.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
However, they want jobs so that they can get money. Google recently had a whole bunch of people that they paid a ton of money to do self-driving thing that left the job they had because they got too much money. So there are people with no money wanting all the jobs, and there are people with too much money leaving their jobs. That doesn't make sense.
Is it about jobs?
It's not about jobs. It's not about money. It's about actually finding an outcome that fixes a need.
Fulfillment.
But yeah, I think with what
application.
It is application, but isn't it self-fulfilling that you want to do what you're doing?
No, absolutely.
And the other thing is, why are we looking for a job? Why can't I create the job? So we're living in a society where we're saying, I'm going to get a degree and somebody's going to give me a job.
Yes.
Why are we not creating a society where I can actually create the job?
Yeah.
I think it's a very good point, because if we look at what products were, they're all becoming services.
Yes.
You know, a car was a product, and now we have Uber, Lyft, etc. We're moving to, you know, transport as a service. And this idea of what work will become is fundamentally different, which I think comes back to the initial point that I made earlier about we need to be educating individuals about who they are as individuals around a sense of well-being and meaning.
The impact one person can make on many.
Exactly, exactly. And
when solving the right problem, right?
No, by doing something that is meaningful and that has a lot of value to me intrinsically as a human being. The value that I would create in the broader society is far greater than the solving one individual's problem.
No. Customers' problems.
Yes, of course.
So
yes,
you're solving the problem of many.
Yes.
That's fulfilling you.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That generates the revenue.
You're owning the quality of the experience, 100%. Absolutely. It comes back to that.
So should we be building a society of entrepreneurs?
I don't think we need to worry about building it. I think necessity is going to dictate that's the nature of...
I think that's a great answer.
So I think you're building a society of problem solvers and creative thinkers. That's what we need.
I want to raise things. Everybody shouts at me sometimes for being a parent and says, she's only three, she's only four. But I'm not raising a three-year-old, because next year I'll be raising a four-year-old. I'm actually raising a contributing human to society later in life.
Yes.
Yeah. And raise an arsehole, right?
Yeah, exactly. I want to raise somebody I want to have fun with later in life and actually have a good conversation with. And that's the idea. Like, it doesn't matter whether you're three or 33. Mm-hmm. You need to be going through a path in how do you contribute to society? What do you do that is meaningful?
Yes.
And this, unfortunately, the selfie generation, the millenniums, how is that going to affect? I mean, we're letting them run rampant at the moment. And it's amazing because there's a wealth of knowledge and perspective to grab in there. But it needs to be harnessed. I think that needs to be focused. And I think their experiences are going to dictate more than their knowledge at this point.
I think that's going to be solved when the shit hits the wall, because they're going to have to suddenly grow up and be responsible.
So are you predicting shit hitting the wall?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, change brings chaos.
Well, and chaos, opportunity amidst all the chaos.
Exactly. Yeah. And with that will come tremendous pain, but tremendous opportunity. And suddenly, you know, when these kids are don't have to take any responsibility and they suddenly have to be parents and have to suddenly pay for school fees, life changes quite dramatically. It really does.
So it's not going to be comfortable, but it will be
100%.
It'll be good.
It will be good. Of course it will be good.
Oh, we'd live in a society with unlimited opportunities then.
Totally.
I mean, that's crazy exciting. Then no one should not have a job because there's so many problems for us to solve.
Exactly. And it comes back to solving human problems. Okay.
So you are still with us on the Futurology Show here on Cliff Central. We are talking the future of wisdom, knowledge, and education, and everything else in between. And we thank you for sticking around with us for 50 minutes. That is amazing. We are going to be talking more about these things in the future episodes of the Futurology Show. We do have Mrs. Karen Wallstra. Sorry, I didn't get that one right before the show started. Education comes from asking questions. So thank you for joining us today.
Oh, pleasure.
We do have 10 minutes left. And we can either go down, here's the choice, we can either go down a road of what would the world be like today or tomorrow if Google never existed? Just saying.
Then it's Yahoo.
No. Let's say search engines weren't around. Okay?
Yeah.
Or we could just say, well, based on where we are and where we're going, where do we foresee ourselves actually? Where do you see us going? And I'm going to let Karen, you're going to start this one. Where do you see us 5, 10, 50 years from now?
I think that's a really interesting kind of concept in terms of how we are going to change. And I think in some ways we allow the technology to change us, but I think the power is in our hands. So how much will the individuals be different? So will we have societies which are completely offline and are refusing to use any form of technology, where some other groups of people are completely immersed and have almost become human robots? And then maybe in the middle you have some in between who won't be extreme in either instance. And I think we're at a space in sort of society now where we can make a choice. And how do we use the technology to our advantage but not let it absorb us and just take over? And I think within an education space, it can be really, really meaningful from that point of view. So how do we use technology in the schools in the future so that we're still encouraging the learning, the thinking, the individual kind of initiative? Or are we going to go down the route where we become so standardized that the children we put out are even more robotic than they are in some of the instances today? And in some ways, that's quite scary. And so where are we going to put the space is who knows. But I think as individuals, we have a choice. And I think as individuals, we can see where it might go. And so if we start saying that everybody should become a problem solver and everybody should start be thinking, how can I create jobs for myself, or how can I see opportunities that I could then grow? That should be very different to where we're all writing standardized tests and all having to say, yes, I've failed, or yes, I've passed, or yes, I've got the A, or no, I've got the F. So I think it could be very varied, but I think it goes back to the individual. Where am I? How can I change that?
You think it's important to empower the individual rather than enable the individual?
Very much so. I think we don't do that enough. So
empowering.
You talking about your little 3-year-old. How do we empower the young child? So for me, there's a chap by the name of Ken Robinson, professor.
Yes. Changing the paradigms of education.
Yes. So Sir Ken Robinson is just amazing in terms of how he's challenged the system. Because for years we've known that sort of by the time the children get to grade 2 or 3, they've lost about, I think if I remember correctly, it's about 60% of their creativity from before they went into school.
Yep.
And that's only a few years. What is happening by the time they get to matric? And so how are we changing that paradigm? And that goes back to the teacher in the classroom, because you have amazing teachers who are sparking creativity and you have others who perhaps from their own fear are cutting that out. And the same then with technology and how you're using it. And so it goes back to, for me, the individual teacher, the individual parents, the child, how you're empowering the child, how you're allowing them to think to grow.
Some practical advice that you give to some of the schools that you maybe chat to?
I think from a teacher's point of view, it's okay not to know. So from a teacher's point of view, I remember when I was teaching the boys and saying things, or the children, and saying, okay, I'm not sure, help me find, or what's the solution? You don't have to know all the answers.
You just need to guide them to it.
Yes, and they can... and. By saying that, it actually makes them sort of more curious, though, you don't know, like, how can we do this? And then the other kind of thinking is, it's okay to make mistakes as a teacher.
Yeah.
And it's okay to say that I've made a mistake.
Yeah.
And then allowing children to be themselves. So, yes, allowing time when they're doing sort of mischievous things. But also not allowing them to sit for a whole hour. I mean, the neuroscientists also tell us every 20 minutes we should be moving around.
Yes.
So if we want to be thinking sort of effectively. So having different kinds of classrooms. So, I mean, there's some schools doing amazing learning spaces now. So if we've still got classrooms with desks and chairs, wow, they're all in rows. Should we be doing standardized testing? And almost starting to say within the school, how do we question ourselves? How do we question the school system? Because I think even within a system, even within a traditional school, the change starts within the school. It's not necessarily a top-down thing. You have amazing government schools who are still following the same curriculum but doing incredible stuff. So again, it goes back to the individuals in that space.
Okay. If anybody wants to follow you, at @Karen_Wallstra?
No, for Twitter.
Yep. For Twitter? Or it's what's just the best way to...
So Twitter for me is the best, and it's just @Karen Wallstra.
@Karen Wallstra.
Yep.
Okay. And any other ways that teachers, schools could reach out to Google? What's the best way to get in touch with Google?
So go to Google for Education, and all the information is there. There's free training, there's information about the tools and the products, and that's the best space to go and look at over there.
Yeah? Excellent. Fantastic. Well, thanks again for your time. Brett Sinclair, you got some thoughts on the end of the show?
Well, Karen, I remember now why I love working with you. I mean, that was incredible. So the kind of thought that's sitting with me in the next 20, 30 years as I'm hoping to live out my childhood dream, sitting on my PlayStation, shooting robots as we fight a war of Skynet and Singularity. Can't wait. I think it's going to be absolutely fabulous.
And then you look up really your device and realize it's real.
Great. Yeah.
Mr. Cowan.
I think this is just a fascinating conversation. Yeah. And Karen, thank you. I think you summed it up beautifully. And you know what? With all the trouble, I'm excited for my children's education.
Yes.
I truly am. You know,
yeah, I think
really
we should
am. So, yeah, I think Excellent. There's a long way to go.
For
but
sure.
I think it's an exciting path.
Excellent. So this has been the Futurology Show. We have been talking about the future of knowledge. We have touched on wisdom, automation, artificial intelligence, bots, everything you could think of, and specifically the education space. Our guest today has been Karen Walstra from Google, head of Google Education, head of Google Education. Somewhere around there. Find her LinkedIn profile. She's someone you need to know if you don't know already. Brett Sinclair.
Adios, squirrels rock.
Cheers. Thank you. Been great.
Excellent. And until next time, #TheFutureIsComing. Chat to you guys later. CliffCentral.com.